right. Well, man, I really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, man.
I know you're a very busy man these days with family and work and
all of the above, yeah, and exactly. A lot more. But, you know, when you have relationships that you care about, you know, you go out of your way to continue to foster them and support.
So, I appreciate it, man. You've always, you know, I always say, like, especially with some of my business partners, I talk about it all the time, like, some of my athletes have been very difficult
sketchy
to work with. You, well, number one, you were probably one of the first guys I ever worked with, you and TJ.
We were the first.
Like, probably the first,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Outside of college.
Right.
And I really wanted to start with that because, like, I don't know how good your memory is. Mine is a little milky, I'll be honest, those days. Those days were wild.
For many reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I want to touch on it a little bit just because I feel like guys don't do what we used to do. So to take y'all back a little bit, Aiken came down to Miami from, hold on, let you start out a little bit because I want people to understand your background. Give a little bit about Purdue, a little bit about, your football career, a little bit.
Okay.
And then kind of meet me in Miami, kind of thing. Yeah.
So I was fortunate in 2002 to get drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars in the third round. I played college ball at Purdue University, 3 years there. From Texas, I mean, country as it can be, not country bunking, but, Irving, Texas, 15 minutes from Dallas. But really the way I grew up was very sheltered in that sense.
Okay.
Just knowing just everything about Texas and Dallas proper. But I chose to go to the further school away that gave me an opportunity, right, a scholarship, and it happened to be a great academic school. Not thinking, okay, football was a way to get a degree and just not have the pressure of trying to get into college and paying for it and loans and all of that. So football was really a means for me that entire time was just to get an education, get a degree.
Wow.
Because I just said to myself, if I could just get a good education, get a degree, I could get a good job somewhere. And that way I could always...
So your mindset was not on the NFL?
No, never.
Wow.
It was not one time. Even the times in college where I was having great success and getting a lot of accolades, I still was thinking, man, graduate and just go into the workforce, right?
Wow.
And all because I knew back home, I had a mother who grew up and raised four of us by herself.
Okay.
And I just wanted to take care of them. I wanted mom, to not have to work as hard. I wanted my siblings to have a better start than I did. And I'm known as a force. So naturally, it was just, I felt like that was my responsibility, not anybody else's but my own.
Yeah.
And so I go to Purdue University, happen to, be on the team with a guy that you might know, Drew Brees, maybe a future Hall of Famer.
Right.
And we're on the squad together. We win the Big Ten. We beat all the powerhouses, the Michigans, Ohio States, Wisconsin's, played against Tom Brady, the GOAT. Got to beat him, dropped the interception, but I got to sack him and all that. So had a phenomenal collegiate career. Was fortunate to then get drafted into the NFL. And quick story, and I'll meet you at our junction. My rookie year, our mutual friend, TJ Slaughter,
yep,
who you grew up with and know as well, he was my kindred spirit, where automatically we connected. TJ, the way he thinks, his approach, his hard-nosed approach to playing the game, I just loved, right?
Yeah.
I just loved. And I was a guy who was still learning because I didn't start playing football till I got to high school.
Okay.
So I really wanted people around me, and being a professional, he's my vet. So naturally we connected, and my rookie year, the first game going to my rookie year, my linebackers coach came to me and said, listen, first game was against Peyton Manning, Indianapolis Colts, said, rookie, expect to play a little and, we'll get you in there where we can. So long story short, the game goes by. I got maybe all of three plays. I played a lot of special teams, but got all of three plays. After the game, he said, you know, my fault. We should have played you more. You know, we'll see what we can do for the next game. Next game comes around, sing the national anthem, you know, F-150 fighter jets fly over, American flag, sing the national anthem. You know, I'm still like pumped. I'm in the NFL. I'm in the NFL. I made the 53-man roster. That goes over. Next thing you know, Tom Coughlin slaps me on my ass, says, rookie, get in the game, you're starting. So I go from not barely playing to all of a sudden being an NFL starter and had a phenomenal rookie year. So that offseason comes around. No, actually, well, I, you know, go through one coach cycle with Tom Coughlin getting fired, and then Jack Del Rio comes in. Jack Del Rio takes over, completely revamps our whole defense, playing a new system, was successful under Jack Del Rio, had another good successful sophomore or, you know, next season. And then that offseason, TJ and I were on the same team. Offseason, I was in LA with my cousin and thinking, you know, I would spend the offseason, some of the offseason there. I get a call from TJ Slaughter.
Yep.
Like, listen, I'm going to Miami for a weekend. You should come join me. And he's my vet, you know? I'm like, all right, I'll meet you there.
Yeah.
So I fly touchdown. TJ picks me up. We get to Miami and, you know, we get to South Beach. And it's South Beach. You know, if you really, South Beach back in the day.
Yeah,
South
back in the day.
Back in the day, it's different. Yeah. And if you've ever had that experience, you know how electrifying and just how the vibe, the people, the culture, the food, the organic conversation you just have, just walking, not having no intentions, but just to figure it out, right? And then, you know, it was one of those, a weekend turned into 3 months, you know, the entire offseason. And then that's when we connected, because I knew that you and TJ grew up and I trusted the people that TJ introduced me to. And he was definitely right about you just being a man of your word, a man that works hard, a man that's passionate, a man that loves people, a man that loves growth, and really truly is about investing in people.
Yeah.
And the only, and I'll, this is true, this is a true testament. The only person I've ever allowed individual to coach me, train me during the off season, was you.
Yeah, and I actually remember you telling me that. And you're not the only one that's told me that too. And it's been like very, you know, it's you take a lot of pride in it. You're like, wow. And then also you take it very serious.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I don't know if I ever got enough credit for. And recently I've been doing these podcasts and like Ricky Jean Francois said something very impactful like that to me. Oscar got to hear that one too. And it just means a lot because I almost cared too much, you know, like my football career was taken away from me from injuries. And like, I literally lived through y'all. Like I was like, you know, like everything we went through, and then to be able to see you put it on the field, that for me was like, that was everything, you know, like, and so I really cared and I was diving into learning as much as possible to figure it out. And, and I just stayed on that. And then, but to go back, like our work ethic though was on like another level.
Tell people, like, let's give them the story. I want you to tell them.
Yeah. So back then we would, and this is not exaggerating. This is exactly how it went down. And this was every day. No days off. Literally. All right. So we're talking about waking up. And again, the wake up, for us, you know, because none of us really had jobs other than, my job is to train y'all. So, but y'all, you know, you're NFL players, you're basically on vacation, but working out through it. So it could have been 6 a.m, it could have been 7 a.m, but it was early mornings.
It was early.
All right, it was early mornings. We would start in the weight room and we would lift at least an hour, sometimes 2 hours. And when I say lift, I'm talking like to failure, pushing each other. And by the way, I was young and in shape back then, so I actually did everything with them too.
Yes,
it wasn't just me pointing and counting reps. Yep. No, I was jumping in there and lifting. And
you did every rep. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's another reason I respect you, because you did every single rep, every single drill, every single run. You was doing it
everything right there with us. Yeah. It's probably why I'm still hurting today. But, and I wanted to. Like, it was something that at that time, I wanted to lead by example and let y'all know that the crazy shit we were doing was not crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was doable, right? So we would work out first. Very intentional in our workout, very intentional in our lifting. Then we would go down to the sand pit. So the Flamingo Athletic Club had a sand pit, like a volleyball court, and we would do sand drills. Then we'd go to the pool. So we'd go straight from the sand pit to the pool. Back then, there was literally girls laying out topless all around the pool, and I'm not exaggerating, like at least 11 girls basically naked. Yes. And so that was definitely some motivation.
You're right.
So we're like, doing like wading in the water and doing, TJ was very, he loved the pool. Like, he was a very pool guy. So he had all these crazy exercises we'd do in the pool. Then you think it's over. No, it's not. Then we would change. Then we would go to the football field and we'd do field work. So we'd do gassers. We'd do, you know, all these routes. We'd do all this stuff. And I'll never forget one of my favorite stories about that time. And I don't know if you were there for this one, but Sean Taylor was working out with us and there was a fence that was about like right to his armpit. And we're having a conversation after the workout and he literally goes, "All right guys, I'll see y'all." And he bunny hopped over the fence. Mm-hmm. And to this day, it's one of the most incredible feats of athleticism I've ever seen in my life.
Like, wasn't he still in college at the time?
I think it was either his senior year or his like rookie year.
Yeah, because I remember
he was young. Because it was Jeremy Shockey, Antrell Roll, Barrett Askew. Who else was that? The Sharper brothers were out there.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember we would have also. What was funny? So the only consistency we had was me, you, and TJ.
Yeah, that's true. We were all, not everybody showed up.
Not everybody had the same work ethic, and not everybody could hang.
That's
because
true.
Because the workouts were so intense that most of the time, you know, you wouldn't have repeats because they just, it was too hard for them.
Yeah.
Mentally, they could not hack it. And so we was all
and
like,
I'm not even done yet. We also, remember, we would go back and we'd run the stairs.
Yeah.
And that was like TJ's, like another TJ thing. Like, he was like, "Oh no, we're running the stairs." Like, because sometimes I'd be like, "Hey, I think we've done enough." And he'd be like, "No, we're running the stairs."
Yeah.
And we used to race up the stairs.
Yeah, we used to race up. And this is me, you know, young and just all right, these are what my vets are doing. Let's go. You know? So, but I tell you, that was the foundation for having a young guy come in. And I knew that if I could handle this part and I could get through the load of workouts, and if I could be around people who I could learn from, you know, I'd go back up to Jacksonville and, you know, whether it was mini camp, training camp, you know, during the season, that was a breeze.
That was a breeze, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Freak talk about that too. Just how his coaches, he would be like laughing during the workouts. And they'd be like, "What are you laughing at?" He's like, "Man, if you knew what I just did, what I came from, you know, this is nothing."
Right.
And, but then what's even to me, even crazier, we would get done. And we would be done like around, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock. We'd all go back to our apartments. We'd all take a nap. Mm-hmm. And then, boy, we would party our asses off. We would go out and we would do a dinner. We would do a club. We would stay out till 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then run it back.
And it was, I mean, the break time really, you know, a lot of days were maybe 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was the afternoon, that's where we would make it up.
Right.
But then it was just one of those, okay, you know, come 6 o'clock, come 7, come, you know, 7:30, we're in the gym. We would always make sure we matched the time that we were going to meet up, and we were always there.
Always.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, because it was like, you know, it would get late and, you know, they were like, even sometimes, you know, they turn the lights on in the club and we were all dancers.
Yeah, that is true. We're all dancers.
We were all dancers. I'll never forget, TJ used to do the splits in the middle of the club. But we would be dancing, and then sometimes they'd be turning the lights on us, and we would all like look at each other and be like, all right, I'll see you in the morning. And we, you know, no matter if we went our separate ways or we left together, we still, like you said, we met up the next day and we did it again. And that, I think y'all probably set me up for failure. And what I mean by that is, like, I got so used to you guys, and then, like, you know, the Joe Johnsons, the Sean Livingston, some, you know, the guys that really wanted to work and that really gave it their all and that actually wanted to get better and wanted to be better, not just physically, but also mentally and spiritually. And I was around a handful of those guys. And then, you know, you start to do this for a long time, and then you start to see the other side of it where guys have tons and tons of talent, but they're not willing to put in the work and they're doing the wrong things. They're showing up late. And so for me, it was very hard to keep doing that. And that's why I kind of like started I started to pivot a little bit with my business, is because I just couldn't take it anymore. Like it was robbing my joy of life, because I loved it so much. And then I wasn't seeing the love, not for me, but for the process, right? Like, I don't care if you like me or not. I actually kind of don't want you to like me in that moment, because you're not supposed to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm kind of taking you to a place you don't want to go. Yeah. So that there's not a whole lot of love there. Maybe love after you see the results. And I think that's what I got, but that's really why I pivoted. So let's go back. So, you know, we could talk for days about those days. I'll tell you a little bit too about me and you personally. Like, I always admired to you, your, so you know me, I'm a little like, you know, a little wild, like crazy, like very
passionate.
Very passionate.
That's the word I use for you.
All very right, good. Passionate. Thank you. And you have always been a very like stoic person. Like in your tone, in the way you handle yourself, in your responses. Like, even me and you, we probably, you know, had our moments where I said the wrong thing or tried to push you in a way that didn't rub you the right way, but you always handled yourself in a very professional way. And even at a young age, I mean, and like for me, I always admired you for that. And I always like looked up to that. And I was always like, I wanna like add that component to my life, you know? And I think I've done a better job recently with it. Probably not back then.
Recently.
Yeah, recently. Just, you know, recently. Maybe, you know, just figuring that out now at 45. But I just wanted to say that to you. And then also too, our fashion senses were always on point.
Right.
You know, I always would laugh, because we'd show up and I'd be like, okay, he's like wearing the same thing I'm wearing. And I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but we always were on the same page.
We were trendsetters in that sense. That we weren't shy to, you know, show it out, and you know, obviously we were dancers and we weren't afraid to speak to anybody. We were not, you know, gun shy to approach anybody or to ask anyone. We used to have to, even though we were NFL players back then, we had to negotiate our way into a lot of places, right?
Yeah.
Just because how South Beach was at the time.
It was different. Like now, if you have money, you can get pretty much anywhere. Back then, it didn't matter who you were.
Yeah.
It didn't matter who you were, how much money you had. You had to convince them that you belong in the club or the restaurant or what have you. So
I mean, but a lot of that, to your point, you know, first of all, let me say, and I appreciate you, you know, saying that about me. And I think a lot of it too is, one, just how we all grew up, right? Whether it was you felt like you had a good upbringing or not, but we're who we are really now as adults all comes from how we grew up and how we were affected with the relationships that we had with, whether it's internal or immediate family or external. For me, the way why I was always stoic or serious, for how some people would say, is because I knew early on that if I didn't have a different way of thinking, if I didn't have a different way of absorbing and handling my emotions, I was just going to fall into the same trap as everybody else that I saw growing up, that I saw that had way more talent, had way more opportunities, and they just couldn't handle themselves. They didn't know how to express themselves. They didn't know how to handle thoughts, conversations, or would we have the wrong reaction in the most untimely manner. And so early on, I saw that. So I said, okay, this is going to be who you are. And if you're to grow, if you're to get out of this situation, if you're to help, you know, your mom and your siblings, this is how you're going to do it. And it worked out. It worked out. Yeah. And a lot of it, I tell you, it helped me out in football. It helped me on the field, because not that I didn't have emotions or I wasn't affected, but I had a way of being in and out and letting go and moving forward. Right.
Which is a gift. It's very much like they say the best fighters are not emotional. Mm-hmm. Like they're not emotional fighters.
Yeah.
Because in football and fighting and in sports in general, you're going to have good moments and bad moments. But how fast can you forget the bad moments so that you can keep doing the good moments?
Yeah.
And a lot of guys get caught up into the mistake.
Yes.
And then they're like, they're only thinking about, man, I dropped the ball, man, I dropped the ball. Yes. And then they drop another ball because they dropped that ball. But if you can forget about it and move on, then that's a gift. And I think that's one of your gifts.
And that's the thing about life too, right?
Yeah, like,
you know, because, you know, life is always evolving, right? Life, there's the vicissitudes of life are happening to you. You can't tell, you don't know when the seasons, you don't know, you know, who's going to come in your life and affect it. But if you're able to think about and collect yourself and then move on to the next thing, right? Always changing, always leveling up, always allowing yourself to grow, then you'll see the successes. You know,
I agree. I always say there's no such thing as losses. It's only lessons,
it's
right?
Only lessons.
Like, it's like you're only learning as you make mistakes.
Yeah.
So this stood out to me earlier. You said that you really thought that you were just gonna get a job so that you could take care of your family. And then the first thing that popped in my head, and don't laugh, but well, you can laugh because I think you'll laugh, is the first thing that popped in my head is you walking down the stairs in your mansion in Dallas in your robe. And I was like, I was literally thinking, he definitely did it. So you know, obviously you don't tell us, you know, how much money you made or anything like that, but I mean, it's a pretty awesome moment. Like an outsider looking in and someone listening to you say that all you wanted to do was take care of your family. And then to have that moment where you signed that big contract for Dallas and you get to do it. Like you get to do it. How like, I don't know. Like what was that like?
Yeah,
like,
man. So I'll tell you a quick story. at the 11th hour, you know, you go through your rookie contract.
Yeah.
And then you go through, you're now a unrestricted free agent. And at the 11th hour, I originally had a somewhat of a tentative agreement between, it was a San Francisco 49ers and the Tennessee Titans. And at 11th hour, I get a call from Bill Parcells, right? And he's like, listen, this is Bill, blah, blah, blah. You may have heard some good things, some bad things, but I would love for you to come to Dallas.
So wait a minute, because I love how like nonchalant Bill Parcells calls him on the phone. That's pretty epic right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, was that like... And pretty cool.
It really was. I someone got heads up from one of his close friends that which I actually knew was a marketing guy, and he called me to give me heads up. Like, listen, Bill Parcells wants to talk to you. Take it. You know, I think it would be worthwhile for you to take the call. So I was able to collect myself and really act real cool. But really, I'm thinking like, it's Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
And so he calls me. So right after we get off the phone, I call my agent. I said, hold up. Hold up, you know, like I'm not signing anywhere yet because I think I can go to Dallas and I'm from Dallas. I grew up in Irving.
Yeah, Irving.
What a lot of people don't know, during the summers when I would go home for about roughly a month or 6 weeks, I would sneak into the old Texas Stadium.
No way.
Right, drive to the parking lot, find one of the gates that were open, jump or sneak under or jump it or go through it, and then run every single stairs.
Wow.
Every single stairs in that stadium, that old stair, I have seen it, ran it, sweated on those stairs.
Wow.
And so the opportunity to go back to my hometown and then back to a stadium where I've worked my butt off, you know, I said, wow, like this is, you can't write a better script.
Exactly.
And so I fly to Dallas. It got to meet Jerry and did the whole tour. And then Bill Parcells sits me down. He says, listen, you're the missing piece to my defense. I'm like, what? Look at this sales guy. Mind you, he's got a first round draft pick, Pro Bowler Roy Williams, first round draft pick Pro Bowler Terrence Newman, first round draft pick Pro Bowler Greg Ellis, first round draft pick future Pro Bowler, future Hall of Famer DeMarcus Ware, Marcus Spears, Chris Canty, like all these guys that we all know and see on TV now, and you telling me I'm the missing piece of your defense? Like, I mean, come on.
I will say this,
it's a 3-4. I have never in my entire life ever played in a 3-4 defense.
Okay. All right.
So then he's asking me to learn a whole new scheme. And you're telling me I'm the missing piece to the defense. You know, lo and behold, listen, it worked.
Exactly.
It sold me. Yeah. And I was able to go to Dallas and fulfill a dream where, to what you're asking, really have that comfort, have that cushion to take care of my family.
Because they took care of you too.
Yes, they did. You know, thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jerry. You know, the way that I really wanted to. And that, you know, it was like the coming, or you can say, you know, I made it. Yes, but yes and no. Because as we all know, more money, more problems.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Right.
And so much comes with that. And so many people come out of the woodwork. And you're playing in your hometown. So there was a lot of stress at the time, but at the same time, If I just could take a snippet of that time period, I definitely fulfilled a dream and a goal.
And how long did you play for the Cowboys?
I was in Dallas 3 years.
3 years. And was that your last stint? Or you went to Buffalo, right?
Traded.
Dolphins, right?
So when Bill Parcells came to Miami as the president of football operations, he traded for me to Miami.
Oh,
so
wow.
I became a Parcells guy.
Okay.
You know, from that point on, and got to play in Miami for 2 years.
That's right.
And then played a year in Buffalo.
All right. So I was right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I knew I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't know the time. So Buffalo was the last.
Yeah, Buffalo
was
the last stop.
Probably a good place to.
It was. You know, it was one of those, like, God was like, listen, you played in Jacksonville, Florida. You played in
I'm going to give you the worst
Dallas,
weather ever.
In Texas. And then back to Miami. Like, you need some cold in your life. Like, I need to cool you off. You're too hot right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so what was the NFL run was how many years?
Total? 10 total.
10 total. Wow. Yes. A decade.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. And now, so, all right. So now football's over. You're a business, like you're like a legitimate businessman now.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that, like that transition, because I know for me, going from like an athlete to playing college football to that, and then kind of diving into strength and conditioning, and then going way more into CEO life and business life, it's definitely different, but there's also a lot of similarities, and especially from leadership, and I think that one of the main reasons guys like us are so connected is because of our football experience and like what we learned through those times through these kind of coaches like the Bill Parcells. Like for me, my Bill Parcells was Brother Oliver. I don't know if you remember Coach Oliver from the championship team from Alabama, and then he coached at Auburn, but he was that famous 11 front defense that shut down Geno Toretta, the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, Geno Toretta.
They shut them down, and all 11 people would line up on the line. And so he came to Auburn, and he would, like, the way that he would break down film, and then also just the way he treated us as like men, you know, not kids. Like he taught us things about life, and that's something that I'll never forget. Talk about a little bit how you've transitioned into the business world and how, you know, you've used some of these tools and some of these things that you've learned throughout your career, that 10-year career.
Yeah.
Because you were influenced by not only veteran guys, now then you become a veteran, then Bill Parcells, and I mean, I'm sure you said Jack Del Rio. Yeah. I mean, some of these amazing coaches.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that you're not implementing some of that into your now when you speak to the 80% white women. Right. Are you giving them a little football nuggets? So
probably not as colorful as they gave it to me.
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah,
but definitely I bring all of that. You know, as you level up and as you transition, you know, most people think that they have to completely reinvent themselves and become this new. You do have to become somebody new, but what is really happening is you're bringing all that experience and all that knowledge and all that perspective with you. None of that stays, you know, in the back. And yes, the transition, one of the things that I knew early on that I, for me to continue to have success in my life, and success can be, you know, it's ambiguous. You can describe it however you want to, but it's having that confidence that you're reaching those milestones and those goals that you've established and you want in your life. Right. One of those things I knew early on that I did not want to be a statistic. Remember, early on I said how I grew up, what I saw, I always knew I had to do something different.
Right.
You know, most NFL players, and stats tell you 75% of NFL players 2 years after leaving their professional sport get a divorce. 70% go broke. I think the stat for even like, you know, like mental behaviors or descriptives are even like higher.
Wow.
Injuries, and I just said, wow. So I didn't give myself time to wallow and say, oh, I'm no longer a professional athlete. Mm. You know, within 3 months from making a decision, and I was fortunate to say, so they wanted me to now become a backup, right? And I, you know, at the time, I'm like, oh no, you're not gonna let him work. You're just gonna say, you're just gonna give the position to him, you're gonna make him earn it.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? It's not for me. I'm okay. I'll walk away from, I think at the time it was $1 million guarantee to be a backup, you know, linebacker. Yeah. And I said, I'll walk away from that. Now knowing it's a lot harder to make $1 million in real the real world.
Yeah.
But I did that. And then within 3 months of making that decision, I enrolled in grad school. And said I would go, you know, get my MBA, get my master's. And the reason for that, I thought of, okay, my peers that I, you know, went to college with, that graduated, they went into the real world while I went out and played football.
Right.
And so they have a 10-year head start on me into what I call civilian life and really living life. And I needed to accelerate that learning. And it was one of the best decisions that I made, not because of the philosophies and, you know, all the school that you get from it, but from building your network and from adapting to the business world is really what I got out of getting an MBA than per se the school side of it.
Okay.
And then from there, moved to New York, lived in New York for 2 years, had a place, an apartment in the city of Manhattan. And I worked for a wealth management company that was in New Jersey, and I would take the train, the Jersey train, do the reverse commute every day. And and I did that, and in that span, that was when I got my lessons of business and investments and learning, you know, how to look at a deal and then how to look at partnerships and how to present, you know, have these formal, you know, boardroom presentations with these guys that I had started, you know, you've met one of them, Manish, I had started to invest with while I was still playing. And that added another layer for me to have that flexibility, that like multifaceted layer where I can be an athlete, I can talk sports, but at the same time, I can be relatable and talk business. And so I did that for what, 6-7 years? And then the pandemic happened. I had just gotten married, you know, so we were very similar. You were a little bit ahead of me in that span. We're similar, being the same phase of life. And I knew that one of the challenges in my role at the time with the wealth management company, well, I traveled a lot. And
I think you had mentioned that.
Yeah. And I knew that for me to have success in my personal life, family was the most important thing.
Yeah.
Early on, I said, if I'm ever, because during my playing days, being around TJ, I just
you're like me. We're gonna blame it on TJ.
He's not here.
So TJ, we're blaming it on you.
He can't defend
our
himself.
Wild days. You know, we're blaming it on you.
We always said, I'm not gonna have a serious relationship. You know.
I remember that. I remember when you were like, nah, bro, I ain't doing
it's
that.
It's just not. I just know it's not gonna be for me. Like I'm gonna wait. And boy, when I got in that phase, that mode, you know, I was all in. We're that type of people, right? We're 100%. All in.
Once we make a decision, it's done.
It's no tiptoeing around.
Yep.
And that all in for me meant that I wanted to be a present husband, a present father. And I hadn't even had my first daughter yet.
Yeah.
And I just said, when it happens, I want to be all in. So I knew that I needed to pivot again. So pivot from being a professional athlete, going into business and finance, and then all of a sudden trying to figure it out and pivot again. And happened to meet somebody who knew, who had a relationship that I had in the finance world that said, wanted me to actually come to UBS. And I said, no, I've already done the finance thing. And then they said, well, why don't you look at insurance and consulting and risk management? Why don't you look in that space? I don't know nothing about that. Like, why would I do that? And did my due diligence. And one of the things that I found out, you know, that you do, especially in the field that I'm in now in employee benefits and risk management, it's really about people. That's the problem that you're solving, is helping businesses and employers and owners, you know, connect with their employees and bring them solutions and provide compensation and health and, you know, and medical and dental and vision and all the voluntary benefits that you can help support an employee's overall well-being, which adds to an organizational well-being as well. And I said, wow, one, I love people. Like, yeah. I just love having a conversation with strangers and, you know, just learning about them and their journey, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And I love learning their stories, because you can always find a lesson in somebody's story and somebody's journey that you can relate to.
Right.
And I said, well, I love people. And one of the things, I still have a foundation now, Dream Builders Foundation. And at the time, the brokerage firm that I would go work for, their owner, she was really huge in the community as far as philanthropic endeavors. Gave back to a lot of communities, a lot of different programs. And I figured this was one person, again, that I could learn from.
Mm-hmm.
So I jumped, I mean, again, didn't tiptoe into it. I jumped full head steam. And since then, I've transitioned, still in the same industry. Last year, I got an opportunity to become the market leader, area president for one of the top three brokerage firms in the world and at Gallagher. And they asked me to join their team, actually lead the team in the market.
You're like a head coach now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like that's how I hear it. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, he's a coach now.
Yeah.
Just in a different field.
To think how far I've come. But I take you through that story and that journey is because everything I've learned playing football came with me from a mindset. So Jack Del Rio, one of the things I learned from Jack Del Rio from day one, he would always talk about mindset, midstream adjust mindset is how you start your day. Has nothing to do with the world, has nothing to do with external forces. It's all on you. You know, how you receive and how you communicate, it's all on you.
Mm.
Being able to be flexible and to midstream adjust when things don't go your way will determine the difference between if you make this play or if they blow right through you and it's a touchdown. And I apply that to my everyday approach. In the conversations that I have with our team, it's about being able to be flexible and pivot when you're making a sale, you're trying to make a sale, and the prospect or the customer, if you want to say, isn't buying it, or they throw something left field at you. How do you pivot from there?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not having to pull a rabbit out of the hat or be anything different, but understanding, giving wiggle room to be able to adjust in that moment and find a way to have to bring it home. You know, that's one. Bill Parcells, one of the early lessons that I got from Bill was, you know, be able to be comfortable in confrontation. Like, confrontation is okay,
mm-hmm.
but always leave room that you can mend the relationship and always come back. So Bill was very confrontational, even in his, you know, more mature days, right?
Right.
You know, but what you'll always see, Bill always found a way to build bridges. Even after he's torn a guy down, he's let him know how he really feels, he'll always go back and he'll mend that relationship. And so that allowed me to be able to tell, just allow my team to understand the truth. Like, This is what it is. Whether you are fulfilling your goals or you might have made a mistake, but it's not what you say, but it's how you say it.
Right.
But then always come back and build them back up, you know. And I think that's an important tool. Wade Phillips, you know, Wade Phillips was one of my coaches in Dallas. He became a head coach, and I loved playing in his defense and the creativity and how free he was, you know, and just being creative in the moment. And he gave us a lot of autonomy on the field. There were games where he would call one play And Brady James and I would look at each other like, nah, we're not gonna run that. Let's run this.
Yeah.
And we would run that. And
talk about a contrast between Bill Parcells and
Right,
Phillip.
Right. But so in my life now and my team, I allow them to be themselves, right? I allow them to have that autonomy. So all of my sporting endeavors and the lessons and the different coaches I've had in my life, I use a lot of their lessons, and that's what has made me as a man.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I'll tell you one thing we need to do though. What do you think of the water?
I like it.
It's really good, right?
Yeah.
You have to promise me we'll run this back with TJ.
Oh, yeah.
And
for
we'll
sure.
just have to
like tell the stories.
Tell stories. Yeah. And just stick to the stories.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. We can definitely do that.
Oh, my God. There's so many.
This is the one thing that, you know.
Do you remember going to Jacksonville for the Super Bowl?
Oh, heck, all of us? Do I? Heck yeah.
Bro,
yeah.
I was Heath Evans the whole time. I don't know if you remember. Everywhere we went, I checked in.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was the one. Like my wife is cool. Like she knows. You know, she may not know like all the levels, but yeah. like she knows. Yeah, yeah. So she's cool with that.
Those are the days. All right, girl dad. You got two now.
Yes.
That like happened fast.
Yes.
Like, was the second one like a surprise, or were y'all trying?
No, we were. It was one of those. All right. Are you ready? I was ready. I've always, you know, it's yeah. like, let's get it over with. If I could have 10, I would have 10, right? But, you know, so very patient. When she said, let's go, I was like, let's go,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it happened right away.
Right away, yeah. Right,
actually, not intentionally, not because we're going to talk about this, but like, I have socks. Like, that's my. This
it.
Is my oldest, Araya, and this is my
no
baby,
way.
Ayla. Yeah, so
that's the best.
I'm all in on them too.
That's amazing. And how's it been? Just
man, it's as you can witness, and anybody who's had kids, it's the best experience you will ever have.
Ever.
Nothing trumps. Yeah. Trumps. That,
and people
man.
Talk about it. You know, like I've had like even my brother. So my brother has three kids, and you know he would talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. But until you experience it, you just don't know. But for me, it is literally the highlight of my morning, mm-hmm. midday, evening. Whenever I have an opportunity to mm-hmm. be with my son, it is everything.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Yeah. And I tell people, and I don't know if it's a boy girl thing, but especially having a girl for a man, there's something, there's like a bond there that's hard to describe. And it's a love that it's even hard to express in adjectives, for me at least. And I love my wife. My wife is my North Star. She's my ride or die.
Yeah.
She's my best friend. She knows, like, maybe not 100% of my dirt, but, like, we commute. We're very upfront and very transparent with each other. Like, she knows all of that. But my girls, she know when them babies come around. Like, all right, they're here, you know. Quick story. My oldest, when she was born, and I remember cutting umbilical cord, handing her to Alex, my wife, and they're having their moment and she's crying. I'm like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Like, I'm a father now. Like, this is, And but at that time, in that moment, the connection wasn't there. And it was just one of those, I was just there, and they were having their thing.
Right.
Like, they were doing their thing. And all the nurses and the doctors was all about them.
Right.
And as a male, as a father, like, you're just useless. Like you're just there. And so this goes on for about an hour. The nurse comes back in and says, sir, okay, we have to do some tests and, you know, take your daughter. And they do it right there in the room. And as they grab Araya, and at the time, that whole entire hour, besides her coming out, she didn't cry. We cut the umbilical cord, gave her to mama. This girl was quiet. And she was great. As soon as the nurse grabbed her, put her on this table to do all this test, she starts crying, on top of her lungs, just like screaming. Mm. So now Papa Bear comes out. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like,
right.
What did you do to my daughter?
It's
like,
yeah.
She's a newborn.
They cry.
I'm like, no, this is hours gone by.
Right.
Like, she wasn't crying. It's like, sir, calm down. She's okay. Let us do what we do. So I'm feeling frustrated. I got to do something. And so I just said, well, her name's Araya. It's spelled A-R-I-Y-A-H. It means lioness of God. And the whole time she was in the womb, I would say her name every single night. And in this moment, I just said, well, just say her name. I said, Araya, Araya, daddy's here. As soon as I say that, Manning, she turns around, boop, looks at me.
No
and
way.
Not a word.
Oh my gosh.
And we're staring at each other. She's looking at me, I'm looking at her. And in that moment, that was the bond. Like, that was it. And from that day on, it was as this little girl sees me, I hear her voice, she sees me, she hears my voice. It's on. Like, we're like two peas in a pod. Like, we're just, so, and the
That's
same,
beautiful.
And
beautiful.
The same connection is even with the second one. Yeah. So it is definitely something special.
That's amazing. That could have been a mic drop for sure. very touching moment. Is there anything, I know that advice is based off experience, but I do feel like a man that is in your position that has had the life, you certainly have many more things to accomplish. And in my opinion, we've both just started, like, especially now we have young children, so we better do a lot more with ourselves right, or we're in trouble. But just, you know, if you could give us a gem, you know, like share something that you feel like maybe is inside of you that often you don't have a platform to even say, and you have it here.
Yeah,
And I would love to hear, like, you know, some deep gem from you. And it doesn't even have to be that deep, but just, I'm just curious, like, what's in you right now that you could share?
Yeah. You know? I've gone through many iterations of evolving as a man, as a person, as a human, and where I am in life, you know, what I say before has allowed me to get here and to really be here. Most of the time, you know, we're all chasing something and we fall into the trap of the rat race or trying to go out and do something, not realizing the importance of being in the moment. And family to me is everything. I'm fortunate that what I get to do now, it's not because of necessity, but it's because it's a purpose, it's a passion. I truly do love the industry I'm in. I truly do love the people that I serve, right? I serve on their behalf, you know, my team. At the same time, I serve my family. Nothing, and going through the process of getting this role and the job, you know, I went through the whole process, got to go all the way up to the CEO and the chairman of the company, you know, and I told him, listen, if this role, this seat is going to disrupt family, and it's not for me.
Yeah.
And to have that level of conviction and of maybe passion and to know thyself, I think it's important. And as a man that you are leading your family, it is on you. If you don't grow, if you don't evolve as a person, your family don't grow.
100%.
You know, and that is true. And then most people don't realize the effect that they have on their family dynamic. You know, stats are there. Data is there that tells you, you know, the likelihood of teen pregnancy, the likelihood of teens, you know, not graduating from high school, the likelihood of teens getting in trouble is due to the man, whether he's there or not there. And not there meaning, you know, he's not present. He could be there, but not present.
Right.
You know? And I think that is the most, if I can say anything through this podcast or anybody can hear me, is know your importance and know how you lead. And if you can understand the importance of your leadership, whether it's I'm outnumbered in my own house. And so I have a bunch of women and I've learned that the best thing I can do in my own house is to be patient, to allow my wife to have her voice, to allow my soon to be 3-year-old to have her voice. Yeah. But then, you know, not that my word is final, but just to absorb what they have to say and whatever they're going through, and then give my perspective and my opinion, and then we'll come together and come up with a solution together, but that my voice is just as important as theirs, but to be patient in those moments. So, you know, the sum of it all is just that your importance is relevant. You know, your need is there. Like, you are relevant in this whole dynamic of family, of community, of life, and to continue to grow into that and own that.
And another thing too that just stood out to me is you use the word serve, and you're serving your work, and mm-hmm. you're serving your family.
Yes.
And hearing you say that, and hearing you say, I'm serving, I'm not working, mm-hmm. I'm serving. Like, that perspective and identifying that and knowing that is, to me, why you will continue to just accelerate in not only your field, but also, you know, when you do have your 10 children, Alex, sorry.
She's young enough. She can do it, but I don't know if I can make it.
But I really appreciate this. I mean, we could talk for three hours. So I'm actually, it's going to be fun. Like, you know, you're here in Miami. We're both, you know, kids. We do need to hang out more, but I'm like excited now to, and I don't even use that word. I don't even like to be, you know, I'm more encouraged or what uh-huh. have you, but just to see like where we both end up, you know, in the next 5-10 years, it's going to be cool.
Right. So, and I think that's the cool thing about our connection and our bond is that we're doing our own thing and we're each other's biggest cheerleaders, right? Like, we're each other's biggest support. And whenever, you know, you reach out or I reach out, I mean, we make a conscious effort to make sure that we're there for one another. And the whole family thing, because we are in the same phase and season of life,
right.
You know, we have that perspective to where we can always lean on each other. So just know that I value the relationship. I respect and truly understand what you're going through as you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, and you're doing it. Like, you're crushing it. You are the example, the model, the platform that folks should emulate and copy, because the success and the growth is there and will be there.
Appreciate it.